Members, we can't really call it to order yet because we don't quite have a quorum, but we can get started because the chair is going to have the first bill up, and I know everyone pays attention to the chair. But before we start on that, everyone's laughing at me already. Before we start on that, we have Burnsville Senior High students here, right there. And for you students there, I was talking to a couple of you, that's where I spent my summer at your high school on that new addition that they did. My real job outside of here is a pipe fitter, so I was putting in your new heating and cooling in that new wing. Did you know that every school has tunnels in it? Yeah, I spent most of my time in the tunnels underneath your school. So I know how to sneak around. I wish I had known that when I was in high school.
We're lucky you didn't.
Anyhow, thank you for coming and joining us. I hope we give you kind of an idea of what your state government does. We make a lot of important decisions that affect you, from how we fund your education to how we're going to train you for the next set of jobs once you leave high school. And this is the Workforce Committee, and we're working today on a small business caucus addenda and how we kind of improve the small business environment in the state of Minnesota. And seeing how this morning we're going to have we're going to go over the small business caucus, I've invited the chair of that caucus to sit in this chair while I'm presenting my bill, and she does a good job on mine. I'll let her take the whole day in.
Good morning. Since Representative Winkler is a little confused, I'm going to...
Let me raise a point of order.
I'm going to just put a little...
I make the rules of my community.
Give a little clarification here. Last September, the House of Representatives, I think first time in history, created a small group caucus, and we devoted ourselves to listening to small business initiatives. Representative Mahoney was a big part of that caucus, a very valuable member of the caucus. And so he has invited us today to come and talk about the 8 bills that we are going to be supporting this legislative session. And I want to thank him for allowing us to do that. It is really nice to be able to have one spot where all 8 bills will be presented, if all the members can get here, in sequence and in a package. And hopefully from that you will see a little bit about of the different initiatives that we have been focused on. Before we get started, I just want to let you know that we in the Small Business Caucus, first of all, our first goal was to listen to small businesses. And we decided we were going to do that in three ways. We were going to invite business leaders into our Small Business Caucus to talk to us in a very informal fashion. We said that we would go out and we would hold small business forums throughout the state if anybody desired that. And we did go to two. In fact, we went to Representative Pepin's district and we went to Faribault, Representative Fritz's district, and they were extremely well received. And then the other thing that we did is we created our own small business survey. And the reason that we did that was because we learned through our listening that very few small businesses actually have access to a professional organization. And so we decided that we were going to try to solicit information directly from small businesses through a survey. And actually it was quite successful. It exceeded our expectations. We actually got 1,080 small business surveys back. And so at the end of this hearing today, we are going to hear from the researcher who actually collated the small business surveys and did the research and has come to some conclusions about what small businesses are saying. We think it is really important work that we have done, and so once again I want to thank Representative Mahoney for allowing us to have this informational hearing. I have Representative Mahoney, if I may just make one more announcement.
Go right ahead, Madam Chair.
I was just waiting for the sarcasm, like, when are you going to get done talking? give you the gavel and you don't quit. But this is really important. We have a group here from Champlain Park High School. And for those of you who don't know, Champlain Park High School is in is comprised of two different names, Champlain and Brooklyn Park. And I happen to be the state representative from Champlain. And Representative Horton, right behind Representative Mahoney, is the state representative for Brooklyn Park. So this couldn't have worked out better for us.
Now, you know, you kids are going to be required to have a picture with each one of these two before you leave. No, just kidding.
So, Champlain Park students, would you wave, stand up, do something? Aren't they a good-looking group? And smart, too. Yes, and smart. Okay. With that, we are going to start with the bills that the Small Business Caucus has gotten behind this legislative session. And Representative Mahoney, would you like to speak to your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with me is Representative Sterner, who has co-authored this bill with me. My bill deals with community banking and how the state and the state's accounts with the community bankings. Presently, there's no incentive for the state to bank with community banks or credit unions. And we have to make these smaller financial institutions as competitive as we can, as many assets as they can in these smaller towns and small in neighborhoods. This bill gives a preference to community banks who bid at 90% or higher than a residential bank, non-residential bank. It also requires all new accounts with the state or state agencies to be opened with the community bank or credit union, and existing accounts to be moved to these two institutions. One of the things that I found out in the Small Business Caucus was that community banks do a better job of lending to small businesses. This particular bill is currently, I'll phrase it this way. Currently, six other states in the union have banking regulations that require the state to do banking within state borders. This is actually the first of its kind, if it passes in the nation, that gives a preference to credit unions and community banks. The state of New Mexico got it through one of their houses, one of their chambers, and I believe it passed out of their House chamber. You know, the House is always so much smarter. It passed out unanimously out of their chamber. What this does is it requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to give a preference to community financial institutions to act as the fiscal agent of the state's general revenue account. When bids are received from the community financial institutions in a non-residential financial institution, the contracts must be awarded to the community financial institution. It's a pretty simple bill, but it has large implications. There are so many of our small banks and small community financial institutions that do so much of a better job with our small businesses, and that's where this particular caucus was trying to focus, on micro businesses, people that have 20, 50 employees or less, because they think that Representative Dietrich mentioned it in a news conference earlier, it was that 96% of companies have less than 20 or 30 employees. So members, unfortunately, we can't vote on that in this committee and send it right to the floor. It has to go to state government finance, I think it's in possession of state government finance. So we will get a voting opportunity in that particular committee, but I expect it to fly through there just like New Mexico did with theirs. I know Representative Sterner has a few comments that he'd like to make as a co-author of this particular bill, so I'll turn it over to him.
Representative Sterner.
Thank you, Chair Dietrich. I just was going to mention there's approximately 8,000 community banks in the United States. The vast majority are located in communities less than 50,000 or fewer residents. Minnesota has nearly 500 community banks by themselves. And communities banks represent about 12% of all the bank assets, but they make about 31% of all the dollar amounts of small business loans that are less than $1 million. And they also basically have, with the 12% of the assets, they have 12% of the assets, they also make 20% of all the small business loans. So this bill will try to get them more capital so that they can be able to loan out the businesses to the small businesses that need it.
Any questions for either of the testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney or Representative Sterner, in the bill it talks about a non-resident financial institution, bank or credit union that's not headquartered in Minnesota. The reasoning for that language?
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the reason for that language is that we're trying to have Minnesota money stay with a Minnesota corporation in the state. My concern when we go to the largest of large banks, multi-state or multinational banks, is that the money does not stay in the state of Minnesota. Representative Gunther used to have a famous line that $1 spent in the state has a multiplying effect of about 7 times. And I'd like to get 7 times the use of our money in this particular state if we possibly could. And Representative Sterner couldn't have said it better. These small community organizations do about 20% of the, under $100,000 loans to our small businesses, or the micro businesses.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, the purpose for this is to keep them from getting the money from the state of Minnesota. Is that why you're putting it in here, so they're excluded from being included in loans or anything like that?
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, there are two banks that will not come under that would be excluded in this particular bill. They're relatively large banks, big employers in the state of Minnesota. I'm still trying to figure out the cost to those particular large institutions in the state of Minnesota. So I can weigh the number of employees for one versus the other and pick the winners in small towns and main streets of Minnesota versus the Wall Street. Although, one thing? I did get interviewed by the Wall Street Journal today. Me and Lou Cavina.
That's quite a team. Representative Pepin, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was just, for clarity, so, for example, U.S. Bank, which is Minnesota bank-based bank, but it's a large corporation, so would they be given the preference, or I'm not sure where they fit in here? Or are those one of the two you were talking about?
Representative Mahoney.
And then I have a follow-up.
Chair, Representative Pepin. There is an amendment coming that limits the number of the amount of assets, okay. And it's likely to be a limit that U.S. Bank would exceed.
Representative Pepin.
And then my question is, I know this was just introduced, and I'm sure you don't have an estimated cost. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what kind of difference. I mean, do you have any, information from RFPs that could kind of say how much this might cost the state if we're going to not go with the lowest bidder?
Representative
Any Mahoney. Idea what that might be?
Representative Pepin, Minnesota Management and Budget is still working that particular number. We will have, I have a meeting with them, I think it is Wednesday, prior to getting to State Government Finance. I hope to have those numbers by then.
Thank you. Representative Breinart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And because this is an informational hearing only, you may not want to go into this detail at this point, but is there a standard by which the multiplier factor was determined? Is there precedent for that?
Representative Mahoney.
Representative Breinart, did you mean the 90%? No, there's no standard. It was a number that was used in a number of other places, and then in particular in the New Mexico bill. So it's just a 10%. I could have done it 5%. I could have done it 25%. But I want to keep it as close as I possibly can. And members, I will tell you that this is not the be-all and end-all to these community banks and credit unions. They still have to meet the capitalization requirements and collateral requirements for the state of Minnesota, which are fairly substantial. We are not a small institution. We have hundreds of millions of dollars in cash flow, and many small banks and credit unions will have to figure out a way to collateralize, and they still haven't done that yet.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think then Representative Mahoney somewhat answered my question. I wanted to know if there was a bottom base as far as what would be expected of the banks. And so you mentioned the collateralization that they'd need to do, perhaps. And I'm just wondering if you know then what the total number of community banks that may be eligible that would fit the criteria that you're looking at.
Representative Mahoney.
No, we do not know the exact number. The community banks, small community banks, have been relatively supportive of this. They've had some input to this. We got verbally a commitment of support from one of the two community bank type organizations in the state. We're still working on the other one. I don't know, and they don't know just yet what percentage of banks will be able to participate. It kind of hinges on how they can collateralize some of this stuff.
Is there anybody in the audience who would like to comment on the bill? Since we're not voting on the bill, I don't think we need to get into a heated debate of pros and cons. But if there's anybody who would like to make a general statement about the bill, you may come down to the podium now. Looking like there is none. Closing comments from the author and Representative Sterner. Oh, is there?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I didn't ask you this before, Representative Mahoney and Representative Sterner. I'm just wondering if when you're looking into your research, because I'm on state government, I'm wondering if the large banks like U.S. Bank that would not qualify under the asset limits, I'm wondering if there would be any information as to what effect that would have on them. I know that they do have a lobbyist, and I don't know if you've talked to that person or not, but I'd be curious to know. I'm a former employee of U.S. Bank. I'll put that out there.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin.
Representative Mahoney.
You know, U.S. Bank's a great corporation. They have a lot of employees in downtown St. Paul. I have banked with them myself for many, many, many years. I'm sure that they will be fully prepared to comment on this particular bill, and I... I am not delusional. Well, most of the time.
We have another question. No. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to have you revisit the statistics. So what percentage of small business loans did you say were made by community banks and credit unions?
Representative Sterner.
About 20%. They have about 12% of the assets, but make about 20% of the small business loans.
$100,000.
Representative Winkler.
I'm sure. So that would then indicate that 80% of the small business loans are made by institutions that are not community banks or credit unions.
Representative Sterner.
That is correct. Representative Winkler, yes.
Okay. Well, I guess my question is, how does this preference help them do more of that if the other institutions are already providing the significant majority of the small business loans?
Representative Sterner.
The suggestion would be also is that they have only 12% of the assets, so if there are more assets provided to them, they would be able to have a more of a return on investment for the loans given out. That would be my opinion.
Thank you.
Well said.
Any further questions? Closing comments from the author or Representative Sterner.
Well, I hope we have good luck, as good a luck in the state government finance. Representative Kahn is a very smart woman. She will have pointed questions.
Representative Sterner, any closing comments?
Just thank you for allowing to have the informational hearing today.
Thank you both. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3079. Representative Portman, if you would like to start moving down to the podium. And Champlain Park students, you can get to watch your own state representative in action.
I'm trying to figure out whose class this is. Is this Mrs. Ambrose's class? No? Wonderful. Well, we're glad you're here.
Representative Hartman, would you like to explain your bill?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm here to talk about House File 3079. And the purpose of 3079 is to make some improvements and efficiencies, if we can, in the environmental review and permitting process. One of the concerns we heard from small businesses was a concern that Minnesota's regulatory environment might be a little bit tougher to deal with than some of our neighboring states. I think when we delved into this issue, we found there's two problems. We have a perception problem, and we have a reality problem. And they're both equally as important. The perception is that you never know how long it will take to go through your environmental reviews and your permitting process, and that it has an uncertain outcome. The reality is sometimes it takes longer than it should, and sometimes people feel that they're doing the same things twice for different purposes, whether it's environmental review or permitting. In working on this bill, I've been working very closely with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, who have very different points of view on the issue generally of environmental review and environmental permitting. And what we're trying to accomplish is finding the areas of consensus. There are things that the Chamber of Commerce would like to do to environmental review. There are things that the environmentalists would like to do to environmental review, and we're looking for the area of overlap. And we're really, in this very short, challenging session, looking at the lowest of the low-hanging fruit, where we can have agreement and move forward. For most people, they're unfamiliar with the whole concept of environmental review. And I think what was good about the Small Business Caucus hearing on that is we learned a lot about what is environmental review and where does that fit into the process. It is a process that happens to provide information to units of government before a project goes forward so that the environmental impacts of the project will be known at the outset. Many different state agencies deal with environmental review, but actually the vast majority of environmental review is done by cities and counties. So, for example, in Minnesota, in the last two-year period, just to give you an example, there's been 55 city reviews of projects, 50 counties that have reviewed different projects. The MPCA has done 45 environmental reviews. MnDOT has done around 15, and DNR around 13. So the vast majority is city and county review of projects. The agencies have themselves begun a process of trying to make environmental review much faster than it used to be. And in the past 4 years have really driven down the time that it takes to issue permits and to complete environmental review. What we don't have is really good data on the timelines at the cities and the counties, because they don't need to report the amount of time that they take with this process to any state agency. The average time for a project to go through the environmental review process in Minnesota right now is 228 days. That's the median time. The shortest review happened in 44 days, and that review was completed by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So the longest was 1,800 days, the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And I think what happens is the numbers from the Minnesota Department of Transportation throw the averages off quite a bit, because they're dealing with major federal interstate projects like the Stillwater Bridge that can drag on for years and years and years. And so in dealing with our perception problem, I think it's important that we separate out what's going on at cities and counties, PCA, DNR, and then MnDOT, which is kind of a whole other category. I will briefly go through what's in the bill. There's a couple sections that aren't in the bill yet that we're hoping to add if we get some agreement. But sections 1, 2, and 3 state an efficiency goal for issuing permits in Minnesota. It's a goal. It's not binding. It's very flexible for the agencies. But it just articulates a state policy that we would like these to be issued within 150 days. We would like some certainty for businesses and for them to have some sort of a concept of how long they will be involved in this process. One of the other things that comes out of sections 1, 2, and 3 is that the state agencies who do environmental review will have to report on the reasons for delay when it takes longer. So we'll hopefully get to the bottom of why it takes longer. Section 4 of the bill is one that has the potential to save a lot of time in the process. Right now, if there's conflict related to an environmental impact statement, the conflict goes to district court. Section 4 of the bill would skip the district court level and go right to the Court of Appeals. And this is actually good for both the environmentalists and the business community, because typically these disputes end up at the Court of Appeals anyway. And this makes the process parallel between the permitting situation, which right now already goes right to the Court of Appeals, and the environmental review situation, which right now goes to the district court and then to the Court of Appeals. So this has the potential to save time and money on both sides of the equation. Section 5 of the bill directs the agencies to create customized environmental assessment worksheets for different industries. So instead of everybody having the same 30-question environmental assessment worksheet, they would be customized for different types that kind of are recurring, so they're a little bit more tailored. And it would also direct the agencies to accept the environmental assessment worksheets online. So hopefully that streamlines the process for businesses. We are still working on language for two other sections. One would discuss when Minnesota has a higher standard than federal law, that we are very clear about why we do, and so that people can know and understand those different levels we might have in Minnesota law. And I would just add to that, we have more beautiful water and cleaner air than most of the rest of the country, and we would like to keep it that way. And then another section we're working on and we're close to agreement on is not having a duplication of analysis in the environmental review process and the environmental permitting process. So if an environmental question gets looked at once, then we would say that that particular very specific examination would not be redone by another level of government or in another process.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Any questions from members for Representative Hortman? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sitting on public safety, I hear concerns from a financial standpoint that the court system is already looking at a load that is not going to be allowed to. And I'm just wondering if you've had contact with the Court of Appeals and how they feel about being put in this position as you're referencing them to be the one that does the review on these particular applications.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Representative Anderson, what this would do is change it from the district court to the Court of Appeals, so it actually reduced the costs because it would take out one level of review. And these disputes typically end up in the Court of Appeals anyway. I would assume that we will see a fiscal note from the courts if they think that this would make things more expensive.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up. Representative Anderson.
Representative Hortman, have you had any contact with people from the Court of Appeals to give any feedback?
Representative Hortman.
No, not at this time.
Thank you.
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is actually along similar lines. I've heard a couple of discussions from my district about removing the district court process and what the loss might be there. And so I would have concern, or I guess I would encourage you to make contact with the district court and find out what occurs at that level that might not occur at the Court of Appeals level. And you have said that typically cases end up in the Court of Appeals. I'd like to see some of that data. You know, when you say that, you're implying that the district court process might be superfluous, but I'd need a more thorough argumentation to be convinced of that.
Representative Hortman, comment?
Sure, Representative Dietrich and Representative Reinhart. In dealing with both, you know, the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy and the Chamber, and actually the cities and counties have been involved in this conversation too. What happens in these cases is a very extensive factual basis is developed through the EAW and the EIS process. And so when it gets to district court, it is not usually a fact inquiry, a discovery type case that you see in normal litigation. The fact record has already been established. It's a matter of reviewing the government's decision. And so I wouldn't be carrying, excuse me, this particular provision forward. I mean, as a litigator, I certainly feel that there's value in going to district court when people need to resolve disputes. I wouldn't be carrying it forward unless I thought that it was an efficiency that didn't detract at all from the look at the environmental issues by the court.
Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. I, too, have had quite a few calls about the removal of the district court, and whether it's reality or perspective, I think it needs to be addressed because there is quite a few citizens out here that are concerned for taking the district court out of the picture.
Representative Portman, did you want to comment? Or
sure, just to add, we've been working with the cities and the counties and the environmental groups and the chamber. We have not so far had conversations with agricultural groups, and this concern I know is coming from the agricultural community, and so we are going to get together with them and make sure that they're okay with all the parts of the bill before we go forward.
Madam Chair.
Representative Haas.
You are right on the money where the calls are coming from. Thank you.
Members and people in the audience, Representative Davney has come into the room, and when Representative Davney comes into the room, we all stop. No, I'm just kidding. He is on a very tight timeline, so we need to get him down to the table to present his bill. And this is a bill that many members, especially some of our co-chair, Representative Downey, and others have worked on for quite some time, so we want to make sure he has adequate time. If there are members in the audience who would like to speak to Representative Portman, they may do so after she's done speaking here today. And if need be, Representative Portman, you can come back to the table after Representative Downey is done, if you so desire. But this is informational, members and people in the audience. We are going to be taking no votes. But I was going to ask you, Representative Portman, if you wanted to make any closing comments.
No, I was hoping you were done with me.
We are. I just changed my mind.
Then you can say thank you as opposed to...
Representative.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I didn't expect... It's the first time the whole room has stopped when I walked into it.
Yeah, but everyone's leaving.
you're missing the best part, kids. It's Burnsville High School. Did you introduce them?
No, I did not.
Yes,
I did not.
Did.
Burnsville High School, every year they study legislative issues and... No?
Yeah.
Some of those are kids at Burnsville. Those guys. These guys. See? So, students.
Students from somewhere, Minnesota.
Some from Burnsville, some maybe from someplace else.
Students from Burnsville, please wave or stand up or something.
There you go, see?
There we go.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davney, to your bill.
Thank you very much. I'm here to present House File 2750, the Angel Investor Tax Credit that is now received bipartisan support from any number of members of this committee and others. This is an idea that has been around for several years. I've had the privilege of caring and working principally with Representative Mahoney on for the last several years in an attempt to provide competitive incentives for investors to invest in very early stage businesses, competitive incentives to our neighboring states and nationally. If you believe that Minnesota is not only in a regional competitive situation, but nationally and internationally, then initiatives such as this to help spark and support very small businesses at the beginning of their process are part of what hopefully is a broad package put forward by the legislature this year. The Angel Investor Tax Credit provides a 25% credit on income and corporate franchise tax for angel investors. Angel investors are, by definition, high net worth individuals. They have to have an annual income of between $200,000 to $300,000 or a net worth of greater than $1 million, and they have to be approved by the SEC to be identified as these investors and to participate in this process. At the present time, they have to have a minimum investment of an individual into one of these companies of $10,000, or for a fund of angel investors of $50,000 to qualify for the credit. The business, to look at the other side of the equation, needs to be in a broad variety of industries. We do carve out some industries that do not qualify. No offense to our friends in the lobbying community, but investments in lobbying firms do not qualify, as well as others. You principally need to be an innovative firm with a proprietary technology. You've got that next new great idea, or so you hope. Bring that forward. Look for investors. Let the investors be the evaluators of the idea, the company, and the market, and take that risk. And we will provide some incentive for those investors. We recognize that many of these investments will fall short. That's the nature of this. But what we're hoping to bolster and enhance is the entrepreneurial activity in the state, where you get successful business people who see a good idea, and they know the individual, and they look them in the eyes, and they say, well, that beard guy might be the right guy with this idea. I'll put some of my money into it. And I may hit a home run, and I may strike out, but then that beard guy will pick himself up, dust himself off, and go to the next new idea. And that's a value to us as a state. We are, I shall say, in discussions with the administration and others on a number of elements of the bill, the transferability of the credit, for instance, some of the fees and investment thresholds, particularly as they differ for individual investors versus the angel investment funds, issues like that. With me today is long-suffering DEED staff who have been working on this and engaging their colleagues in other states to evaluate what it would take to make Minnesota competitive here.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Loftus. I'm with DEED, one of those long-suffering staff. And this is also certainly in the governor's budget, and his State of the State speech announced his support for this. And we've been working very closely with Representative Dabney and the other key figures in working on the proposal. I would have to say that, as we've said over the last several years in the interim since the last legislative session, this is probably the most important single economic development tool that we need that we don't have. We're surrounded by states that have it. Over 20 states do. It is a critical tool in the arsenal of assisting small business growth. So,
any questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Loftus or Representative Dabney. It says here that the qualified small business must have 51% of its business employees here in the state of Minnesota. How do people who have once had their headquarters here in Minnesota have left and are located someplace else, how do you bring them back? Is there anything in this bill or anything to do with Angel Investor that would bring some people who have been longstanding businesses that have no longer, mm-hmm. they might just have satellites here left in the state because of our commercial and business tax, and they've left and they've located somewhere, their headquarters somewhere else. How do you bring them back?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of responses. Keep in mind, Representative Anderson, this is targeted to that small business that's just at the startup phase. So if it is a long-standing business, this may not be the appropriate incentive for them. But I think it's also fair to say that some of those startup businesses that have left, say, for Wisconsin, they're in Hudson. The CEO is in St. Paul. They haven't left. But because we don't have a competitive climate for angel investors, they've moved the business to Wisconsin. They may, I can only speculate, be willing to have a shorter commute if we give them the opportunity to, and bring that business back to Minnesota if they can get the investors here that they can't currently because we don't have this incentive in place.
Mr. Loftus.
Madam Chair, to that question, Representative Anderson, there are, as you know, a number of people who describe themselves as serial entrepreneurs around the country who are starting businesses, selling them off, starting another one. That is the kind of individual who may have been somewhere else in the country. We will do substantial marketing through angel venture capital networks around the country, through the venture capital associations. Once you have a program like this, you get on the map for that. And Minnesota has the one of the best things about the angel tax credit is we have so many virtues and strengths here that we can build on. It's not like we're starting from zero or starting with some other state's weaknesses. We have so many strengths, and what we need to build on is the capacity to grow it based on those strengths. So,
Representative Anderson, did you have a follow-up?
Yes. Representative Dabney, you mentioned the gentleman that located his business in Hudson but lives in St. Paul. Does he have to, in order to qualify, then bring his business back into St. Paul to then put an application into, say, his headquarters now has been relocated to St. Paul or the state?
Representative Dabney.
In order to qualify for this investment tax credit, the business needs to be headquartered here in Minnesota. Have, I think you touched on it, 51% of their operations in Minnesota and fewer than 25 employees. So yes, I think is the short answer.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, I know you've had contact from the Rochester Area Economic Development folks, and I don't have the list of their questions, but I know one of their questions was that why have we narrowly focused this? Why not offer it to a broader group of business people? Why the limitations that you put on? I know that was one of their questions, and there may be others, but if you could maybe just tackle that.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, I would respectfully disagree with the description of it being narrow. I think it's extremely broad in application with a very narrow cutout of businesses that would not qualify. Some of those are areas that traditionally, I think it's fair to say, in tax policy we do not provide assistance for. Retail, for instance. We traditionally do not provide assistance for retail construction or the like. So some of that is I think perhaps a misunderstanding of the bill. I think secondly, having had contact with the Rochester business community on this issue, I think we're wanting to target this to a specific spot in the business development process where Minnesota has been weak, and that we can get the most impact from targeting this rather than spreading it out broadly to a 50-year-old corporation being able to access this money versus somebody with a new innovative idea that can move something forward.
Yeah. Representative Winkler.
Oh, go ahead. I'm getting ready for the next one.
Madam Chair, my question is to, you're the co-chair of the Small Business Caucus?
Yes.
And I guess my question is why another bill that I'm carrying, the Small Business Investment Act, wasn't included as part of this package, because I tend to agree with a lot of what Representative Dabney has been saying, but there's a later stage of corporate growth and people who need venture capital dollars who also can't get access to them. They're still small businesses. It's still a choke point in the innovation economy that we're trying to foster, and I would just think that there would be room in this package of support from the Small Business Caucus for a bill like that.
Representative Winkler, I am so happy that you said you asked that question. First of all, so I have a series of questions for you.
This is not the tax committee.
Are you a member of the Small Business Caucus?
Madam Chair, no, I'm not.
Okay. Did you get the email?
Madam Chair, that's too general of a question to ask.
Madam Chair, I'd remind you that Representative Winkler is an attorney.
I know.
And I have a question.
I'm just trying to pretend like I am. Representative Winkler, well, let me just tell you a little bit about the process on how we worked. We started looking at different categories of different areas that might be important to small business. Representative Downey orchestrated a hearing all around entrepreneurship, angel investment, funding of private companies, and what are the commercialization of different companies. And so anybody who these ideas all came out of a series of about 10 meetings. And so if you weren't at the meetings and you didn't bring the idea forward and weren't there to say, I will offer a bill dealing with that and I will get the consensus of the Small Business Caucus, we did not look at any other bills. And when I saw your bill on the taxes agenda, I had the same thought you did. I thought this just looks like something that we would have been very much in favor of and welcomed, and we wish that we would have had the chance to hear it and put it in a part of our package also. But, you know, as we learned yesterday, a deadline is a deadline. And so we just went with what we had. But we would welcome the opportunity to talk with you more as a caucus.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll just take that as a statement of support from the co-chair of the Small Business Caucus.
Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Downey, again, you got me on that one. Representative Dabney, I know you, in some of the negotiations, we've been talking about accountability. Mm-hmm. Big issue for the bioscience and workforce development. So if Could you speak to that a little bit as to what they were thinking of with their accountability in 10 years out or 7 years out or whatever it was?
Representative Davney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney, as I indicated, we are having ongoing conversations with the administration and others on a variety of issues in the bill. And one is the bill as currently drafted does not include any clawback provision, any way for the state to recoup the tax credit that's given out if the business suddenly leaves, whether it's leaving because I want to move someplace or leaving because other investors from the coasts, which is the traditional challenge for us, come in, provide a significant amount of money to the firm, but then as part of that require that the firm relocate physically. So we are looking at a clawback provision that would go out several years. I think at this point we're considering that the clawback would go to the firm rather than to the individual investor. That has been part of the debate as to where should it go. Other states have different provisions as it relates to clawback, and so again we're trying to be competitive but also trying to be responsible with Minnesota taxpayers' funds in this case.
Okay. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davney, first of all, I'll say I do know this isn't the Tax Committee, so I'm not trying to put you on that hot seat, but I missed the beginning of your presentation, and I'm wondering if you addressed the issue of how this will be paid for.
Representative Davney.
Madam Chair, Representative Reinhart, I think that's best left for the Tax Committee. in all seriousness, that is the... Well, it's not a $64,000 question, but you get the point. In these times, there at one point there appeared to be some low-hanging fruit out there that was acceptable to the governor, some tax compliance changes, I think they'd be accurately described as, that would have yielded a sufficient pot of money to make a stab at this. That doesn't seem to be the case any longer as the Department of Revenue looked more closely at the actual dollars coming back into the state from that policy change. So we're looking for ideas if you got any.
Is there anybody from the audience who would like to comment on the bill? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Anderson has another question.
Thank you. Maybe to Deed, have you gotten any input from people within the state, or maybe even Representative Davney has, hearing about this particular possibility? And if so, how many people, estimate, would you say are looking for something like this to happen? And then it says in the bill something about rulemaking. I'm just wondering, this bill's kind of piggybacking from our taking some bits and pieces from other states and making this available. And I know that one of the reasons that we don't have some of the things is because we seem to be so restrictive in the way we do business here in the state that businesses leave. What are we going to do in making this, because you're going to be making rules and you're going to be making guidelines and stuff, to make it so that businesses don't have to go through a lot of hoops and stuff, and that we are very much intentional in inviting these people in?
Mr. Loftus.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, to your first question, there are, I don't have a number, but there are dozens of people in the state that are ready to jump on a credit right now. Representative Mahoney is well aware of that as well, that would this credit be in place, we would have many, many people calling us the first day that it was eligible, and small businesses, along with their investors, saying, how can we be certified to do this? So I have no question that would be occurring quickly. To your second question, the bill exempts Deed from the formal rulemaking process, I believe, as drafted. That was to the intent to get this thing running quickly. A normal rulemaking process where we write rules, publish them, and seek comment is probably a month's of process. And I haven't done a rulemaking for a few years now, but this I'm sure would be 6 months to a year at least. And so when people have asked about that, I've said, you know, there are a lot of discussions so far going into this bill that are working out all the details, all the minutiae of the process, the certification, so that we can move quickly on it. There's even been talk about whether Deed should be required to act upon a certification within a certain period of days. And we're still working on some of that language. But we want to move very quickly on this, and the exemption from rulemaking will assure that we do certifications of investors and the businesses as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Seeing no questions, and Representative Dabney, I know you need to go. Would you like to just make a quick closing statement?
Madam Chair, I appreciate the consideration, and I also appreciate the Small Business Caucus's work and their championing of this bill. I'm hopeful, and I think Mr. Loftus probably is as well, that this can be the year that we move this forward.
Thank you. Representative Beard? Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This isn't for Representative Dabney. This is just for you. I'm ready to vote aye on the bill. When will it be coming back in a live portion that we can actually move it along?
The bill is in the Tax Committee right now. I'm being whispered to.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Dabney. And next on the agenda, we have House File 3271, Representative Rosenthal. And is Representative Mullery in the audience also? Oh, you are. Oh, Representative Mullery, would you like to come to the table as well? We have a House File 37. Whoa, what does that mean? It's really old or what? One of the first introduced? Or?
Madam Chair, this bill is actually about 6 years old when I first had staff looking into it.
You're such a forward thinker, Representative Mullery. These are both a deal with R&D credit. So who would like to start? Representative Mullery.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, we have an R&D credit right now in Minnesota, but it's mostly used by the large corporations, 3M, et cetera. And when I had a researcher look into the information around the country, the number one way that we could induce good businesses to come here in the tech area was to get them at the very beginning. So when you start a business, you look around and try to figure out what state is good for you when you're starting your business. And the R&D tax credit, if it's applied so individuals can use it when they're starting, is the most effective at actually getting a small business, really small. This is even before angel investment or anything like that. You're bigger by the time you're in that game. And so when you're really starting a small tech business, the R&D tax credit that can be used by just the individual or a couple of individuals working together is what usually affects where they end up doing their business and growing later. So right now, as I say, we only apply it to the corporations, and basically large corporations get all of our tax credit money. What this would do, and also what Representative Rosenthal's would do, would make it available to the individuals. Right now, you wouldn't have to be a corporation, so it apply if you're a subchapter S corporation, which most small businesses are, especially tech businesses when they get started. You could then use this credit, and mine is a refundable credit, which makes it even more beneficial to the beginning business and more attractive to businesses that are considering Minnesota, because a lot of them aren't making enough money to actually make use of it at the beginning. On the other hand, my bill costs more in our budget than the other bill. And so basically what the purpose of this is to get tech businesses or other types of development businesses. It doesn't have to be tech. I remember when Representative Coles had a subcommittee that was sort of a small forerunner to this committee, and we went around to military related businesses largely, and I called back the owners or the officers of them later, and it turned out that they thought that this was the, almost every one of them, I think there was one that didn't, thought that this was the thing that we could do to most get their kind of business to come to Minnesota and develop here. So that's kind of a summary of what it's about. And
okay. Thank you. Before I call on Representative Rosenthal, I just want to make another announcement. You guys have a lot of activity in this committee, I tell you. We have more students in the audience, and this time it is the high school PAGE program students. So would you all like to wave? And
what did she say?
thank you. Thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us. What are you going to be with us for? How long? For a week. Okay, we'll see you on the House floor, huh? Thank you. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The biggest difference between my bill and Representative Mullery's bill is my bill is non-refundable. What it does basically is it takes the research credit and expands it for the first $2 million from 5% to 10%. And as Representative Mullery said, it extends it to individuals, subchapter S corporations, and C corporations. And the part about being refundable or non-refundable is actually pretty important, at least to me. I think it's if this bill were to be non-refundable, you could get a tax credit and use it and say your taxable income was not enough to use the entire credit. Theoretically, the government would then owe you money, and I don't think that's a very wise use of our tight budgetary times. So that is the reason I went for the non-refundable tax credit. These bills both, though, will be great in jump-starting and helping to start businesses throughout the state, and it's something that has been looked into. House File 2318, that was last year's bill. Same bill was put in last year. House File 3271, I think, takes into account that businesses are out there. They need money to invest, and that's very important that small businesses and individuals get the credit so they'll make the investments in their businesses and grow jobs.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To either Representative Rosenthal or Mullery, the company that exists already that's doing R&D might or might not have income that could be the tax credit could apply against. So I'm understanding this is not a deduction; this is actually a tax credit. But does it pass through? Say, if I'm a small company and I'm trying to develop better soap or anything, take your pick. I may not have. In fact, if I'm an S corp, I'm probably passing through losses for several years, just in the real world. What if I find a rich uncle that wants to put some money in, or somebody that, like Representative Dabney alluded to a few moments ago, he must know somebody to put money in me. Can this pass through to investors, too? They have to actually be part owners if it's an S or a C corp, or if I'm you follow my question?
Yeah.
Because if I'm a company doing R&D and I'm doing it on my credit card and my home equity line, I'm gambling on my idea. But if I need to put some serious money into my project to get it going, at what point can an outside investor tap into this credit? Is it transferable in that way? Follow me?
Representative Mullery?
Madam Chair and Representative Beard, that question hasn't come up in the Tax Committee in the three or four times it's been heard there.
Okay.
I can't tell you offhand for sure.
Well, Madam Chair, I could see where there might be some application for the angel credit. So angel credit didn't seem to have any restraints on what it could be invested for or spent for, but here we're talking specifically about wages that are directly in wages are being expended particularly for the purposes of R&D, I think, and so there's a little bit of tightening up there, and I'm wondering if we can, they're both great ideas, I wonder if we can have them both, or if it's going to apply exactly to R&D, then that's going to limit the angels a bit.
And
I go out and tap money to do actually R&D.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, in this bill, I think that's a great idea. It's my understanding that you have to be affiliated with the corporation or partnership in order to use the credit.
LLCs would also. Okay.
LLCs.
Thank you. Madam Chair, as it proceeds, maybe it's an idea you could contemplate incorporating in there. Think if it bring more value to the whole process, if that could be part of it.
Sounds
great.
Like a good idea.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members?
Seeing none, we are going to move to two of the bills that are in the committee, and so they will be voted on. So we need to call on... Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Downey. Oh, I'm sorry, your bill. Thank you. Jumping forward here. Representative Downey, the bill does not have a bill number yet, but it is a fast-track small business bill. Representative Downey, to your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Mahoney, as well for extending the courtesy of presenting a bill that doesn't have a number, that hasn't been dropped in, and frankly is a little bit of a work in process, but it was something that we embraced as a small business caucus. So I'm going to present the ideas and accept questions and critique as we move it forward. So the fundamental premise here is that we can streamline the end user, the customer, the business's experience in dealing with the state as it goes through its initial formation and registration activities. There's a distinct possibility that some of what's in this bill might actually fit under Representative Bunn's bill that you're going to hear, and some of this still needs a little bit of work with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. So I'll present the concepts, take questions, and then you can get on to the bills that are actually at a state that you can vote on them. So what we've heard, I think, consistently in our small business caucus, and you have, is that it's difficult dealing with a big monster like the state of Minnesota. And could we somehow streamline the interface between a business and the state? The department is rightly quite proud of the materials that they have prepared. I think they might even be award-winning from some august body somewhere in terms of the materials and CDs and manuals that we have for small businesses. But if you look at it, it's actually a stack that's a couple inches thick. And the hope here in this bill is that we could somehow streamline that, or at least provide kind of a window into the guts of state government in a way that would make it much more friendly and efficient for the businesses. So section number one talks about, on this portal that you'll hear more about from Representative Bunn, talks about putting a workflow on a single page, kind of a single page workflow that would allow kind of a checklist approach to forming a business. Behind that, of course, is all kinds of material and departments and different agencies and different forms and things, but it would be a very streamlined user experience for the business to go through that whole process. And then section two talks about setting some targets, and this would be from the perspective, again, of a business going through the process as compared to the agencies, and these are rough numbers and need to be worked on with the agency, but if we could allow entrepreneurs doing something out of their home, somebody who's got a sewing business or, you know, going to start a little eBay business and needs just a tax ID number, whatever it might be, you know, why couldn't the state process that in 14 days? So set a target for us so that the end user has a really tight, crisp experience. Similarly, for a small business, maybe not quite so small, but something with very limited or no environmental permitting, why couldn't we get that done in 30 days? Similarly, for slightly larger businesses that maybe do involve some environmental permitting, why couldn't we get that done in 90 days for them? So this fits in a little bit with the with, I think it's your bill, Madam Chair, that talks about the comparison between the states to say what are end user business experiences when they go through this process in other states as compared to Minnesota. And let's benchmark ourselves. Maybe these aren't the exact numbers or the exact size thresholds for businesses, but the concept of making it easier and asking Deed to kind of be the point person to make that process easier is what this is getting at. So I know Deed has a nice customer service process today where I think you can fill out a single form. It's maybe larger than what I've described here, and then their customer service department can walk you through this. The point here is to set some benchmarks and maybe say here's some timelines and objectives that we could agree to as a state and ask them to kind of hold the other state agencies accountable to that timeline. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions or critiques of the ideas.
Representative Downey, it is my understanding that when your bill is introduced, it's going to come back to this committee, so this committee will have ample time to discuss and ask questions. Since we have two bills here on the agenda that can be voted on, we want to make sure that we get to those. And then, so I apologize to you about that. And the other apology I want to make is to Kelly Baker, who was going to present our small business findings. I'm afraid that we're not going to get to that today either. But just so you know that Kelly is my LA now, and so anytime you want to hear about the results of the small business survey, she is more than willing to go through them with you, or we do have handouts, and I think we'll make those available to you today either way. And so I will hand the gavel back over to Representative Mahoney, and in the meantime, Representative Bunn, do you want to come up to the table? Thank you.
Good morning, Representative Bunn. I believe that Representative Obermueller would like to move your bill, House File 2839, back to higher ed.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bunn, you've got 12 minutes.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and that should be adequate. I want to thank you for holding this hearing this morning, and I also want to thank my fellow members of the Small Business Caucus for all the work that we were able to engage in and accomplish in a bipartisan way over this last interim and now bearing fruit. This is a fairly simple, straightforward bill in terms of concept. What it does is it basically provides initial funding of $200,000 and then ongoing base funding of $100,000 a year to the Office of Entrepreneurship and Small Business Development, DEED, to provide a seamless access to statewide resources for new and existing small businesses and entrepreneurs in this state. Before going into why this is important, I want to give just a brief background on what exists currently in the state so you can understand what we're advocating for here moving forward. Our Small Business Caucus heard presentations on what exists in the state as in order to get an understanding of where we are and where we need to head. First of all, as already alluded to, we have a wonderful set of publications that DEED currently produces, including their opus on Guide to Starting a Small Business that is available in hard copy CD and online and downloadable. Secondly, we have on the new Minnesota Business, PositivelyMinnesota.com website of DEED, a business section which has the capability of directing people to their experts, both short-term experts and long-term experts in agency for assistance. Thirdly, they have a long-standing licensing directory to direct people to the appropriate license permit site for their particular type of business they're interested in engaging in. Thirdly, there's a wonderful private public partnership that's been going on for a while now that DEED has with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce that is called Business Connection, and they have their Minnesota mnbizconnect.com website to also assist small, emerging, and ongoing businesses to resources. So what are we proposing here if we have these existing resources that I just described? Well, first of all, as opposed to what Mr. Downey was talking about in the last bill, the license directly we currently had is not what we see in other states. Other states have surpassed this in a number of ways, both in terms of directing to resource and also the ability to actually do permits, do tax ID, and do licensing online. We heard in our hearings in the Small Business Caucus about kind of state-of-the-art in other states, both in terms of resource networks like Wisconsin, WIN, Wisconsin Entrepreneurship Network, but also one-stop shops for businesses like in Michigan and Wisconsin elsewhere. We have some of the building blocks of these systems, but ours is not nearly as advanced as what currently exists in many of these other states. So what we're doing with this project and with Representative Downey's project is trying to move it forward and to enhance our capabilities ongoing so we are competitive with the other states, as we've talked about the need to be in the other areas we're covering in this legislation. So our long-term goal is to have a one-stop, a Minnesota business one-stop. And within that one-stop, there'd both be directions, question-driven direction to resources, both public, nonprofit, and private resources in the state to assist existing and expanding businesses. And also, there will be a licensing, permitting, registration streamlining system available through that one-stop that not only would tell them where to go, but allow them to do it online as much as that is feasible to do in the future. And other states do much of this online now. In terms of going to that big picture long-term goal, our Office of Enterprise Technologies, it has indicated that will cost millions of dollars, not millions that we have available at this time, but it's a goal for the longer term that we would like to aspire to and which some other states have achieved already. So what this particular proposal does is it builds on these existing public-private partnership that's been developed with the Chamber to want to enhance and further those systems. First of all, the Minnesota BizConnect only directs as a certain type of questioning decision framework within it, and it only directs people to state resources currently within DEED or supported by DEED, not all the statewide private, public, nonprofit resources in the state. So it's a very limited DEED has a lot to offer, but it's limited to those state resources currently. Secondly, it doesn't have as sophisticated a navigation mechanism as some of these other states do in terms of guiding individuals through that process and getting them to the right resources. And particularly if we expand it to a larger set of resources, we may need to go to a more sophisticated system down the road here in order to do that and lead them for the process that they don't miss something because they answered no or yes to a question, and then they were totally uninformed about particular things.
Representative Bunn?
Yes.
If I could interrupt, we're going to try and get Representative Norton's bill in. Yep. So if you've got
2 minutes, we're good. Then finally, this resource would also include evaluation of those resources. That's just we wouldn't put any resources out there, but we would give some indication of the quality of them. So bottom line, what this does is move us forward to having this more sophisticated, more elaborate virtual network in the future. First of all, focusing on the resource side, but eventually being one component of a business one-stop that would also include the licensing, permitting, tax ID side. So that is what this proposal is about. And I have Mr. Loftus here, and I will just, because of our time, we'll have him here to answer any additional questions. But I know that he and the agency support this project going forward.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to ask a question about the fiscal amount of this. If it's such a good idea, can it be done without putting any money toward it?
Mr. Loftus.
Madam Chair, Representative Poppy, we've invested funds into the MnBiz Connect system with funds from the McKnight Foundation, as has the Chamber. We kind of integrated our ideas on a one-stop there. I would have to say any further work is, especially to the degree of the online licensing, is Representative Downey knows, is a very substantial investment in the long term. Officially, I can't support $200,000. It's not in the governor's budget, as you all know, and I'm not going to turn down funds, on the other hand. But it is a long-term process, Representative Poppy, of trying to figure out how to integrate these things and these resources so that businesses don't have to look everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's a very important goal for all of us, and mm-hmm. that's what we've got together with the Chamber on it. And Mike Myrie and our small business staff are doing the best they can with what we've got.
I'd like to respond briefly to that question. Clearly, we have to be sensitive to the budgetary issues this year. But in certain key areas, I think the Small Business Caucus concluded that, like the Angels Investor Tax Credit, that we have to do things to improve the business climate in the state. And some of those things take investment of money or actually show up as expenditures on our budget. And we will be looking to find appropriate ways to find these resources for this project. But I think we concluded that from our small business survey, currently only 8% of those respondents said they access state resources, and only 9% said they use online resources. And so we need to work further to make sure people take advantage of what we do have to offer. And one thing is just knowing that it exists. So we have a lot of work to do in that area. And so I think we determined that this is an investment in the business climate of our state that's needed going forward. And so we'll work hard to find the resources for it.
Seeing no other questions, is there anyone that would like to speak further to this from the audience? Seeing none. Representative Oldmuller renews his motion to pass this to higher ed and for possible inclusion. Well, I don't have to worry about that. All those in favor of passing House File 2839 to the Higher Ed and Workforce Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. You're on your way to Mr. Rukavina's committee. Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2849, if I may. And again, I believe it needs to go to Higher Ed and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Representative Norton. To your bill.
Yes. As was talked about earlier by Representative Dietrich when she was chairing the committee, a lot of work went into a series of 9 or 10 meetings. And as part of those meetings, we heard across the state from business leaders. And what the business leaders told us, anecdotally, in many different ways through many different meetings, is that it's easier to get businesses started in other states. Minnesota has barriers. And so we have a couple ideas of what those might be, but we need to look at it further. And so what this bill is asking is to see if we can compare the state of Minnesota to Wisconsin, which is certainly our neighbor, but one that closely aligns itself to Minnesota in a number of business ways. We look at Wisconsin, we look at Minnesota, and we have a comparative study done. And so that is the language of this bill, is setting that process up. And so I think we really need to look at how do we compare to Wisconsin? What happens there that allows a business to start quicker? What regulations are in place in Minnesota that might be barriers? And in order to do that, it's going to require a tougher look than we were able to do this summer in the series of meetings we had. So without going into a lot of detail, I think you'll see in the bill that it's appropriating an undisclosed amount at this time of funds that will be needed to give to the Legislative Coordinating Commission to fund a grant for a comparative study done. And the Legislative Coordinating Council will oversee this and check back with that grant during the grant process and get the results in 2011. So I think there are some ideas out there that this could be a public-private partnership. There are ideas that the Carlson School of Business might be able to do this study. I know they do occasionally adopt a nonprofit for free. We're not a nonprofit. We're a state agency. I don't know if we would be considered for that like a nonprofit would. We feel a little bit like one this year. And so we're looking into ways to either find a partner to help us fund this particular proposal to get the grant going. And if you have ideas, certainly bring those forward. But we're working with a couple business leaders and some major corporations to help us with that. So as we move into the finance divisions, we'll be able to get a fiscal note for this and also hopefully have those folks identified.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Before we go any farther, we have a motion before us. I hate rules. Representative Anderson, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. Still thinking we're still in the seat. Representative Norton, why just a comparison with Wisconsin? Why not some other states? Why not do a broad comparison rather than just narrowly focused?
Great question. I asked the same thing when I took over this bill. And it actually has come up before. I don't think we have to limit ourselves to Wisconsin, but given the money and trying to find who's close to us, whose state is similar to us, who kept coming up in the meetings as, well, in Wisconsin. So we did choose Wisconsin for the study. I don't have any problem with expanding that if we have the money to expand it, and perhaps we could even look at a language change to allow if the LCC wanted to expand it and could find the grant group willing to take this grant opportunity over that would expand it. That I don't think there's an opposition to that, but at the very least, Wisconsin. But thank you for that question.
Seeing no further questions, is there anyone else who would like to be heard on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Norton renews her motion to pass and be referred to Higher Ed and Workforce Development. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. You're on your way.
Thank you very much.
Now can I do the minutes?
Also move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Representative Poppy moves the minutes for February 24th. All those, I'm sure everyone has looked at them well. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Minutes are passed. Members, seems how we got through all the bills today. We don't have to meet tomorrow. We have the morning off. We can have coffee and donuts if we need to. Don't tell my wife.
Oh.
I'm here for donuts and coffee tomorrow.
No, I'm going to be over south in the office. It's a really great bakery. Members, we stand adjourned. Thank you for your meeting. Thank you for your time.